I'm here today with Richard Winter to talk about Francis Schaeffer. So, Richard, why don't you introduce yourself, maybe what you have been doing, and then we'll start talking about Schaeffer.
Okay, well, for the last 25 years, I was professor of applied theology and counseling at Covenant Seminary in St. Louis, and just retired recently from full-time teaching. I'm still teaching some classes and doing some counseling. And prior to that, I was working with the English Labrie for 14 years with my family. And prior to that, I studied in medicine and psychiatry and practiced in psychiatry for about 8 years before moving to Labrie.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting background. So tell me, Richard, what was your first encounter with Schaeffer, either in person, books, Labrie, whatever? Mm-hmm. And at the time, were you a Christian or were you not?
Yeah, I was a Christian, and I was just finishing medical school in London, and I can remember reading Escape from Reason when it came out, walking through the parks of London and on the underground, and wherever I went, I was utterly absorbed by this book. I'd come from a Plymouth Brethren background, that had been, you know, wonderful community, family, but a very narrow view of the gospel. And, you know, I heard the gospel preached every Sunday evening for years, but I didn't understand how it related to culture and life and the whole world. And then, so when I started reading Escape from Reason, it was like going from the front of a candy store into a huge warehouse of amazing things behind, where I began to understand the relevance of the gospel for the whole of life. And because he was reading and quoting people like Camus and Nietzsche and so on, I started to read them and got utterly absorbed by the existentialists. And then I went to Labrie in Switzerland for 2 weeks in my final year, I think, of medical school. So I met Schaeffer there and sat entranced as I heard him leading discussions by the fireplace in the chapel there and around meals. And he was just an incredibly open, warm, engaging character who was sort of opening me up to a whole new realm of life. So it was a really rich moment in my life. And then after in 68, then I went off to do a residency in Canada with the Grenfell Association on the coast of Labrador and Newfoundland. And it was an amazing year of working with the Eskimos and the Indians there. But I was reading Camus and Sartre and listening to Leonard Cohen, his somewhat depressing music. And there I met my wife, who was not a Christian at the time, and began to talk about these ideas that Schaeffer had been helping me to understand with her. And she was at a place in her life where she was incredibly open and searching. She became a Christian. We got married about 6 months later in Boston, had a year around the world, year-long honeymoon, because I wanted to really explore. I'd become rather embarrassed by the arrogance of Christians who said this is the only way to God. So I wanted to see and explore Hinduism and Buddhism and so on. And Jane, a new Christian, was very open for this. So we put packs on our backs and joined the hippie trail and came back far more convinced of the truth of Christianity than when we left. But we ended up the last 3 months at Swiss Labrie. So we drove an old VW van from Kabul, Afghanistan, where we bought it, to Swiss Labrie. And there we stayed with Birdie. Did you ever know Birdie?
No, I did not.
Wonderful English social worker originally, who I'd met actually at the hospital where I trained in London. She said she had been praying for me for years, which was extraordinary. And she went to work at Le Brie, and so we stayed in her chalet and then studied for 3 months there. And so again, the Schaeffers were there all the time, most of the time. And so we sat at their feet and learned and absorbed and found it utterly life-changing.
So you would have met Schaeffer after he's beginning to gain some notoriety in the evangelical world, right about that time, the God who was there,
yeah.
I believe 1968, it was published though, based upon the Wheaton Lectures of 1965. What is, just almost as a sort of an aside comment I would make at this point is that it's so interesting to me to listen to you and to some of the others who were so serious about all of this.
Mm.
And, you know, opening yourself up, is this really the truth? Are there other ways? Richard, I do not see that much today. Now, maybe I'm just not in the right places, but it would seem to me then, if that is true, that Schaeffer's ministry grew out of a different intellectual soil than what we see today. Do you think that is true?
Yeah, I think it's probably is true, because we saw a shift over the time when we were working in Le Brie, and well, actually from that first time when we went to Le Brie. There, it felt like there were people asking more intellectual questions about the nature of truth and reality. And then the shift over the years I've seen is more and more people coming with emotional struggles and family problems and depression and so on. And behind a lot of those sort of personal, what we would call counseling issues, are some of the big questions of life.
Yes.
And so, you know, people were dealing with, actually dealing with the intellectual issues, but they hadn't articulated them as that in the way that maybe they were in the 60s and 70s.
So when you meet Schaeffer, what strikes you about the person himself?
I think it's a combination of things, of his sort of intense engagement with individuals and with the subjects that he was talking about. You know, he would come to a lecture and it might be just with a Time magazine article, and then he would begin to talk about that article and relate it across, his ability to relate across disciplines. Not at a hugely deep level, but at a level that that we could all understand and engage with. And his great sort of passion, and it came across just in his humility and his demeanor, was to help people to understand the relevance of the gospel to life, wherever they were in life, whatever they were doing. And so he, you know, whenever he met us personally, he would stop for a little chat and talk for a few minutes and then move on, and the same sort of intensity with the next person. But he had created, a community there of like-minded people who were doing the same thing and welcoming people into their homes. So it didn't all depend on him.
Right.
It was the nature of the community that was also welcoming and engaging us.
So I've heard it said by those who knew Schaeffer that when he talked with you, it was as if you were maybe the only person in the universe at the time. Would you say that's true of your experience with
him? Yeah, I mean, yes. And when he was answering questions, even in a group over a meal table or something, he was very focused on the person who was asking that question. He was very engaged with that, with them. But I think you see his pastoral spirit in his letters in a wonderful way, where he's not just dealing with the intellectual questions, but with the person as a whole person.
Well, we hear, not so much today, because unfortunately people aren't talking a lot about Schaefer. But back maybe in the late 80s, the 80s maybe as a whole, that people were saying, he's kind of making himself to look like a philosopher, an intellectual, his history is bad, he doesn't get it right here and he doesn't get it right there. What would you say to that?
Yeah, and to some degree that's true. I mean, he wasn't an expert in everything, but he had, as I said earlier, had this incredible ability to relate across disciplines, which I think is rare, and to relate, whether you're talking about archaeology or architecture or art or music, he was able to draw out threads that connect those disciplines, or psychology or medicine. And he wasn't an expert philosopher. That wasn't his primary... He was an evangelist and had a desire to show, as I've said, the relevance of Christianity to every aspect of life. And that's what I think I admired in him, anyway.
And he wasn't trying to be the specialist, was he?
No, he wasn't.
But he did something, which for me was the most amazing thing, it dawned on me the importance of what we would call intellectual history, mm-hmm. showing the connection between ideas, and then, how does that then work out in this discipline or in that discipline?
Exactly,
And I know you said escape from reason, and he does a little bit of that there, more so when he does How Should We Then Live, but certainly Escape from Reason he does.
Right.
He's doing that.
And for me personally, I was still in medicine and then going to begin psychiatry, although I didn't know it at the time when we were actually in Le Brie. But I when I got into psychiatry, and then we would often go down and I would actually do some lectures at the English Le Brie and would talk about the ideas I was encountering with Freud and Jung and all the psychotherapists. It was the folk at the English Le Brie, all influenced by Schaefer's ideas, who helped me to think through what it meant to be a Christian in psychiatry. And so I owe that to Schaefer, that he was the one who helped me. Because a lot of people who knew me when I started psychiatry said, that will destroy Richard's faith once he gets into psychiatry. But on the contrary, because of Schaefer and what I was learning there, going into psychiatry actually just reinforced the truth of Christianity for me, as I saw the ultimate emptiness of many of the ideas of many of the great sort of masters like Freud and Jung and so on.
It's interesting to me, Richard, that though Schaefer had not studied widely, that is, formally, he did his work at Westminster and then he left there and went to the other seminary. But it seems so much of what he did and how he understood things first came from just this immersing himself in the scriptures. We have his Bible and all of the annotations that are, it's like two Bibles. But he just had such a profound dependence upon the scriptures, or so it seemed to me, though not one who, I'm just guessing that from from the sidelines because I wasn't there, but would you think that is somewhat accurate?
Oh, yes, that's absolutely true. And I think it took me back to sort of indirectly. I mean, he was preaching directly from the scriptures on his Sunday sermons, which were always amazing and wonderful and very moving. But in his lectures and discussions, he wasn't necessarily expounding scripture. He was just starting from, say, talking about Picasso, but then coming back to a biblical view of human nature. And where do we get this from? And why do we have the problems we do in life? And why, as a psychiatrist, am I seeing all this incredible brokenness? And I had never heard, really, in all my years growing up in the Plymouth Brethren, I'd never heard people talking about the fall and how radical the effects of the fall were on us and how important Genesis 1 to 3 are.
Yes.
And so studying his little book, Genesis 1 to 11,
yes,
was just so foundational for me in setting a foundation for my work in medicine and psychiatry.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that was how you might see his preaching, because you see the same sort of thing in how she would then live. He would take all of this and he would show Picasso and this or whatever. And then the last, he's sitting down with his Bible open.
Yes.
And that's really interesting, because I'd not seen that sort of a pattern before. I mean, I saw it, but it didn't connect to me. Oh, this is what he's doing here.
Well, he's sort of looking at the human condition and saying, how do we understand the human condition? And both in the beauty as well as the incredible brokenness, the glory and the grief, and that dignity and depravity, you know, those are the foundations of what I talk about and teach today. And it goes back to learning there, I think, in Le Brie and with Schaefer about who we are as people.
So what would you say made him, I use the term, I don't like it, it sounds too pragmatic, but it made him really effective in dealing with people in light of the gospel? I think it was about him that made him...
That's a good, great question. I think... I think his willingness to just start where people are and with their questions about life, and then go from there. He didn't start with his agenda.
Mm.
He really listened to people and heard them and wanted to begin from where they were and then sort of work back to the truth from there and help them to understand who they were in the light of that and why they... how and why there were answers to their situations from that. That's what initially comes to my mind.
Well, as you may be thinking about that, this is one of the most profound things that I've actually heard anybody say as I've interviewed, because of how it's striking me, that this pattern in his life, whether it be preaching or talking to the individual, it was really seeing, if it was the individual, it was really letting that individual talk about where he or she was, and then being able to come to the Bible and explain, well, this answers why this, or it answers why that, or it answers this question or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So you were there for how long?
We were there for 3 months. So I had 2 weeks, then I had 3 months in 1971. Then I went back and studied in psychiatry for 8 years. And during that time was going back and forth from the English Le Brie and sending some of my patients to English Le Brie. And they sent some of the folk who were studying at Le Brie up to see me, people who were struggling with life. And then they asked us to join them there on the team at the English Le Brie, and we were there for 14 years.
Did you practice psychiatry at that time, or was that full-time?
No, that was full-time working in Le Brie.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a mixture of everything, you know, teaching, counseling.
Mm-hmm.
And it was during that time, really, that I wrote my first book on depression. Well, actually, I wrote a book at that time on called Choose Life, because I got involved with the How Shall We Then Live series films.
Yes.
And actually went, traveled with Schaefer to one or two of the showings in this country. And then and it felt to me like we needed something we could hand to people. And so it was actually a very well illustrated book on the themes of the films, on abortion and ethics at the beginning of life. And then I got into writing the first depression book, which was really working out the relationship of scripture to psychology and medicine.
Was that Roots of Sorrow?
That was Roots of Sorrow. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we were there for 14 years.
So we are now, obviously things are different. So not the same sort of things are happening today. People are not at the same place.
Mm.
You know, Schaefer dealing a lot with the turmoil of the 60s, which was probably supported heavily by existentialism.
Mm.
And kind of this, the break away from all authority, except my own, or myself.
Mm.
So if you think about it, Richard, and you seem to have such a excellent insight into Schaefer and his how he did things, what do you think there is that we see in Schaefer that we bring into the 21st century?
Hmm.
Without mimicking, but what in, I wouldn't dare to say methodology, because I don't think you could ever talk about what Schaefer did as methodology myself.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. I have a lot of things going through my mind in response to that question. I think in one way the methodology is still very similar, mm-hmm. in this just meeting people where they are,
yes,
and not trying to push our agenda onto them without really getting to know them. And of course, as a counselor, psychotherapist, that's dear to my heart, because that's, you know, listening to people's stories. And I think maybe this is where it comes out is a lot of what we do in psychotherapy is helping an individual relate their story to the bigger story of God's history, his story.
Yes.
But both in individual one-on-one conversations, also in group discussions. But I think the other thing about Schaefer and Labrie, he saw that it needed to be done in a setting of community. It wasn't just enough for him to go out and do it on his own. There needed to be a place of refuge, a shelter,
yes,
where people could come and wrestle with these problems and think about them, because they're not just quick fix type problems. They may take, you know, to change your worldview, you know, it takes a couple of years, 2 or 3 years often. So to do something, I often used to say that in Labrie, and I'm wandering a bit here, I'm aware of that, that we could do in sort of 3 months in Labrie what might take 3 years in the church. Because it was sort of like an intensive care unit.
Yes.
You know, you have all this time with individuals sitting around meal tables,
right,
sharing family life. And Schaefer realized, I think, that the sharing of our lives,
mm-hmm.
and people coming into our lives and seeing us with our children, with all our faults as well as the good things. For example, just a very practical example, I remember sitting down one evening and I was brushing my daughter's hair. She was about 8 years old or something. And the students were all coming in for a meal with our family in the evening. The next day, one of the girls said, just seeing you brush your daughter's hair so tenderly and with affection brought up a whole lot of things in my own life that I never had from my dad. So it didn't come out of an intellectual question,
yes,
but it came out of seeing how we lived and how we would read children's stories with all the students there in the evening around the table. That was more important to many of those students than the big intellectual discussions and lectures that we had. one girl said, one very perfectionist young woman said, it was playing volleyball every day for half an hour morning and afternoon with you all in that setting of community that made me realize I didn't have to be perfect. Because she wouldn't play for many months, and then she risked it because she was so afraid that if she played, people would laugh at her if she made a mistake.
Yes.
She said, playing volleyball with you all changed my life. That was my experience of grace. Mm. So all sorts of little incidents like that, that I think he saw that those things were just as important as all the big discussions. And it's hard to find that sort of community life in the church. You know, because we all come into church for an hour or two on a Sunday morning, and then we all go back to our homes and live our isolated little busy, too busy lives. And we don't really sit down together and do the things that we were able to do in Le Brie.
In fact, we're not a local church for the most part. Right. We drive in, right? Mm-hmm. And so there isn't even the opportunity, because there is no real centralized community, that just happens to meet on Sunday morning as well. Mm-hmm. So the community that I knew growing up,
right,
you know, I'm sure it exists in some places yet.
Right.
I still think it does in the little valley where I grew up. But I don't, you know, I don't see that very much anymore. The people, my neighbors growing
right,
up.
Right.
One lady, she's now in her 90s, and I have known her since 1948, and she's always lived in the same house.
Yes.
You know, it's really that sort of thing. And
yeah, the continuity of that
yes,
is so important.
It is. Mm-hmm. And I know we can't go back. I'm quite aware of that, but I'm wondering if the church can be more intentional, but without looking artificial at doing this.
Right, right.
Because
that's right, and so I think it's in the context of communities like that that we learn and engage with truth, see it lived out. So it's not just the spoken word; it's the lived out
yes.
word that Schaefer realized. And you know, we know that he was not perfect. He had problems in his own marriage, family, and people saw it, you know.
Well, that's the danger, isn't it? I mean, when you live in community.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But it's sort of more real.
Yes, that's right. It's not contrived.
Right. It's not contrived.
It's not sanitized, which we can do if we all meet over here at this separate place. Mm-hmm. We can sanitize it and have our best
right.
best foot forward,
right.
best
right.
face on, or whatever we want to speak of it.
Exactly. So there's the sort of the theme of honest answers to honest questions.
Yes.
I think it's also a theme of being honest about the whole of life and being able to share some of the deeper, darker stuff. Because a lot of what we did in Le Brie was hearing people's struggles with very hard things in their lives and helping them to relate those to a God who could be trusted and loved and who did have their best interests at heart when they had become incredibly cynical about God and his reality and truth. And so to be able to show them that this was an intellectually reasonable thing
yes.
to believe. It wasn't intellectual suicide, as well as demonstrating for them what it meant to trust and to pray and to have answers to prayer. Because that was the other side of the Schaefers, and especially Edith, was just living with that reality of praying for our daily needs and seeing God answer prayers in terms of living by faith. You know, living for 14 years. And some days we didn't have enough food for the week and we would have to pray. That was a whole different experience too.
Something they started out from the very beginning with Le Brie, as it was, it not? That their needs were met by praying for them. They would not advertise or
right
or anything of that nature.
And other places I have worked, you know, have large teams of development staff who who go out and raise money. That is so totally opposite. Not that they said this is our calling, and other Christians have other callings, and it's not wrong for people to raise money.
Yes, and I thought that was so refreshing when I read that somewhere, maybe in a letter or something, that he would simply say, this is the way God has led us to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But they wouldn't have been judgmental.
Exactly.
To others who might have done it a little differently than that.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
So you would say, clearly, Schaefer really shapes sort of the trajectory of your life.
Yeah,
I mean, not necessarily professionally, but how you think about Christianity.
Mm-hmm. Well, in a way, professionally, in terms of how I think about the relationship of Christianity to what I was doing in medicine, psychiatry, and then through Labrie, it really my calling, I have felt, is to work at the interface of medicine, psychology, and theology.
Mm.
Where do these three meet?
Yes.
And that's what I've been doing, teaching at Covenant Seminary and working, doing psychotherapy, is working at that interface, which was inspired a lot, I think, by, you know, his sort of passion to relate to the whole of life.
So one last question.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about, we're compassionate to the people who are coming to Labrie, but did Schaefer think that there ought to be some sense of accountability and responsibility, or are people just allowed to come and just lay around and...
No, in Labrie, there was a very clear structure for each day, as you probably know, of studying half the day. You know, say you'd study all morning, you'd work, helping in the house, helping in the garden. Some of my best conversations with students were, you know, weeding or planting carrots or walking in the fields. It wasn't sitting in a counseling office, and I loved that. But there was, and then in the evening, then over meals, there would usually be one formal meal a day where we would sit around and discuss whatever students were dealing with, were studying. So someone would raise a question, and then he would talk. We would talk about that together. And then in the evenings, at least three evenings of the week, there was a lecture, a discussion, a movie with a discussion. Maybe a concert. So it was a pretty formal, laid-out pattern. And yes, there were some people who couldn't cope with that, and they would be given some leeway if there were good reasons for them not to. Mm-hmm. But most people fell into that and actually really enjoyed it. They liked the structure. And it was a really good rhythm. And as I mentioned, we would also have fun playing volleyball and listening to music and so on. So it was, they didn't just let people come and lay around. I think there was a sense of, and most people picked this up once they'd been there for a week or two, people are serious here about thinking about life.
Yes.
And so they would then get drawn into it, or they would leave if it wasn't for them.
Well, structure, as you would know as a counselor, is so important for people, particularly when they're struggling, even maybe with depression.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens. All that structure falls away. Mm-hmm. They can't even structure their own lives, which I think tends to kind of feed into the depression. We don't feel good about ourselves, you know, not doing what we ought to be doing. Mm-hmm. Well, I really appreciate your time and just sharing some of these.
Well, it's fun to do it. It's actually stimulated my thinking about it, you know, and taking me back and trying to articulate what it was about Schaefer. Yeah.
Well, our prayer is that this and other things that we're doing not to raise Schaefer to the level of some kind of an icon, not to put him on a pedestal.
Yeah.
But having said all that, there is something, I think, profound in Schaefer, in his person and in his ministry. And I'll include Edith in that.
Very definitely.
That can be a great assist to the church. I think her desires are right.
Mm-hmm.
I think the church, and I speak broadly of evangelicals in most cases, the desire is really good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure we're doing as good at it as we possibly could.
And I think it's very important to include Edith in it, because she was very much a complement, so different. And her ability to tell stories, even though she may have talked too much for many people's liking, she had an extraordinary ability to tell stories and to relate them to scripture and to life and the reality of living as a Christian with a God who is there and who is not silent. And that was so complimentary to... So every, you know, week we'd go to the prayer meeting, which might last for a couple of hours, as she told a story for an hour at the beginning. It drew many people in too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, all right, Bruce.
All right, thank you so much.